You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Home Field Apparel.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important topics in the world of Indiana basketball. This is our 266th edition of Assembly Call Radio and our 868th episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of September 29th, 2022. I'm your host, Andy Bottoms. And let's begin this edition of the Assembly Call how we begin every edition of the Assembly Call, and that is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment.
And Indiana is the national champion.
When it comes down, Indiana will be champion.
Smart takes the shot.
The Hoosiers have won the national championship.
Well, as we get another week closer to the season starting, some more preseason accolades have rolled in for the Hoosiers. Andy Katz had IU ranked 7th nationally in his preseason poll. The Almanac came out from our friends at the Three-Man Weave and Heat Check in the Field of 68, and they had picked IU to be first in the Big Ten as well. TJD in the All-American discussion, and just more fuel to the excitement as we get ready to head into the season. And we are now a week and a day away from Hoosier Hysteria, which is on Friday, October 7th. So it'll be our first chance for this team to start to attempt to live up to some of those preseason accolades. And certainly, as we've talked about over the course of the offseason, it's exciting to be in those conversations and to be projected to play so well. But the proof is in the pudding, and we'll see how the team can actually perform. And that really all starts next Friday, at least to the public eye, as to what we have. I know Coach has been feverishly studying up on the catalog of G Herbo in preparation for the event. So looking forward to a full recap from him on tonight's show of that. But excited that to be kind of the, I guess, the unofficial start to the season from a fan perspective. And we're certainly looking forward to it, and excited about all the expectations that the Hoosiers are looking at here as we head into the preseason. Well, with that, let me introduce my co-hosts for this week. First up, he's a longtime high school basketball coach in the state of Indiana, founder of the Delphi Bracketology Club, and the president of the Micah Shrewsbury Fan Club.
He remembers the days when a movie cost a dollar. Heaven help you if you ever decide to pop your collar. Play hard, but remember, fake hustle is a crime. He's the coach and it's Tonsoni time.
I gotta be careful not to give Coach too hard of a time, as my some of my settings, something was wrong. We couldn't figure out what it was. So he's essentially producing the show and doing all the sound. So I don't wanna rile him up. Things could go wrong for me in a hurry. So Coach, welcome. It's Tonsoni time. What's on your mind tonight?
Yeah, you know, I'm having flashbacks to my high school athletic days with all this kind of music being added to Hoosier Hysteria. I've given up on the rap music some 37 years ago. I don't know, G Herbo from Coolio, a question later on, to maybe Run DMC's more my style. You know, Andy and Alex, it's tough getting old, because you know the music selection starts slowing down a little bit. But we're excited for the start of Indiana basketball. Practice started. You're starting to see some tweets coming out of practice pictures. That just means we are even closer to watching Indiana take the court. A lot of people will see that in a fun atmosphere on October 7th at Hoosier Hysteria. And then, obviously, at the end of the month when we get to see the first exhibition games, we'll really be able to see stuff on the court. A lot of expectations. They got to back it up. They got to do a lot in these practice sessions to make up for some of the deficiencies they had last year. We've talked all summer about what needs to be done to solidify the preseason hype. But it is an exciting time for Indiana basketball, and I can't wait to get going and talk about actual basketball.
Absolutely. Well, also joining us tonight, it's special guest and longtime friend of the show. He's the founder and editor of the most trusted and respected IU basketball news site on the internet, Inside the Hall. And unfortunately for him, he's also a White Sox fan. As a Reds fan, I can say nothing to anyone about baseball, maybe not even Pirates fans at this point. So Alex Bozich. Alex, welcome back to the show. Opening thoughts on the current state of things with the team.
Guys, it's good to be with you. Good to see you, Coach. Good to see you, Andy, as well. Andy, looking forward to your preseason bracket that comes out, I think, sometime early November. I know you like to do a preseason bracket, so looking forward to that. But thanks for having me on the show. Really appreciate it. Just big picture, I kind of look back to where this program was a year ago today, and the expectations at that point for Indiana basketball going into last season compared to this year just feels totally different. We'll see how much of it's actually justified where Indiana's being picked in the preseason, but it's never a bad thing, in my opinion, to go into a season with high expectations. That should be kind of what Indiana basketball is, right? On an annual basis, go into the season with high expectations. We'll see how it all shakes out, but it's good to be talking about a program that feels nationally relevant again for the first time in a while.
Absolutely. All right. Well, here's what we have in store this week. We'll hit some Hoosier headlines in segment one. Then we'll move along. And the main reason we had Alex on is we wanted to discuss and debate through some of Inside the Hall's list of the Big Ten's top 25 players. Jared left a few thoughts of his own, one of which I intend to give him a hard time about as we get to that. And then in segment three, we've got a handful of questions. So we'll answer as many of those as we can from our community members. So all of that coming up this week on Assembly Call Radio. And now let's talk about our presenting sponsor.
Home Field Apparel, well on for the team.
And this edition of Assembly Call Radio, just like all shows on the Back Home Network, is presented by our friends at Home Field Apparel, where they have the largest collection of vintage IU apparel that you'll find anywhere, with beloved logos like two different versions of the Bison and so many more. Bottom line is that Home Field has something for fans and grads of pretty much every school, with unique vintage logos for all of them. And no matter what you buy, you know it'll be comfortable and the colors will last through many washes. Plus, you're supporting an Indiana-based company that came up through Kelly. And what could be better than that? And if the weather anywhere that you're listening is like it's been here in Cincinnati, it has definitely gotten cooler and has become prime hoodie season. So lots of great stuff, both from an IU perspective, but also from other schools. They dropped some Central Florida and South Florida gear earlier this week, and then East Carolina stuff today that is just as good as all the other stuff that's out there. So, and I think no matter who you like, no matter what you're looking for, you should be able to find that out at Home Field Apparel. So you can go to homefieldapparel.com and use our promo code HOME to get 15% off your entire first order. That's promo code HOME for 15% off. Once again, that website is homefieldapparel.com. Wear one for the team. All right, who's your headlines? Alex, we'll kind of go to you first. Coach and Ryan did a great job of breaking down the media day on last Thursday's show, but wanted to get your thoughts. You guys at Inside the Hall had a lot of great coverage up of that as well, but what are a couple things that maybe stood out to you as you listened back through some of the comments that were made there?
I mean, the biggest thing to me was just how much Logan Duncombe was talked about in general. I went into media day expecting to hear about the freshman, which of course we did. We heard about, Xavier Johnson. Obviously everyone wanted to hear from him after the off season. And it was really the first time he talked to the media since his legal situation had been resolved. But a lot of talk about Logan Duncombe, which was surprising to me given his role on the team last season. And just the fact that I don't think any of us really go into the season expecting him to be a big part of the rotation in any way, but the way Trace Jackson Davis and Race Thompson talked about him at least makes you curious to see what he may be able to provide, if he's going to be able to do some of the things, just from a physical perspective, where he looked totally unprepared to do last year as a freshman. So I think all of a sudden, the front court depth looked really good on paper, but even not considering him when you talk about the fact that they bought in Malik Renew. But, Race and Trace were talking like Logan Duncombe's going to be able to actually give him minutes this season. And, I have no idea, and I'm sure you guys feel the same way. No idea what to expect there because we didn't really even see him play at all last year. I mean, I saw him a little bit in high school and thought he was a guy that had a lot of long-term upside. But, I mean, the fact that his name came up so much was a little bit surprising to me. The other thing was, I think, good for to hear was just how Mike Woodson embraced the expectations of the season. You hear a lot of coaches talking about, well, we don't read that preseason stuff. You know, we don't really think about that. But Woodson basically said, you know, if you don't want to play at a place with those type of expectations, you really shouldn't be here. I think that's the attitude you have to have when you're in a place like Indiana. You can't run from the expectations. You know, I don't really necessarily think it's great for any team to be picked to win the Big Ten, because if you win the league, everyone says you were picked there. And then if you don't, it's a disappointment. So that's not necessarily the greatest spot, I guess, to be picked in the preseason. But, you know, I feel like Media Day is great for us as content creators, as people that talk on a podcast, gives us something to talk about. When the games actually start in November, I think a lot of the stuff that we're talking about now will be kind of a distant memory, and we'll actually focus on basketball in front of us. But big picture, I thought there was those were kind of the two things that stood out to me from the Media Day. Was Logan Duncombe being talked about so much, and then just Woodson embracing the expectations.
Yeah, in terms of the expectations, I'll kind of throw this to you first, Coach, and I think you guys probably touched on this a little bit last week, but you know, anything you heard or saw from the media day, did it give you a feeling of whether this team is ready to embrace those expectations and can handle those kinds of expectations?
Well, the answer is no. Media Day is not going to answer that. They're play on the court. And it is something real when you are expected and then everyone's gunning for you and you have to be your best on a night to go from a program under Coach Woodson in the first year, rebounding from the Archie Miller era, to now being a consensus, according to, you know, Dylan Burkhart's graphic we have here on the run sheet, that everyone's picked Indiana to be the champion of the – that's a big jump. And you have to be ready for it. I applaud Coach Woodson for taking it head on, because you can't ignore it. I mean, everyone's on social media. Everyone knows it's being said. So you ignore it, and then you let it define itself inside the locker room. And then you also want a leader of your program to set high expectations. You don't want to come in and say, I just want to make the tournament. My goal as head coach at Indiana is just to make the tournament. You want to win Big Ten titles. But you have to be able to handle that physically and mentally. And the only way we'll really tell, Andy, is when games start. And pressure is what you put on yourself. So, again, I think Woodson talks a good game about playing the game the right way and doing things the right way. And then that leads to winning. That's a lot of coach speak as well. We all do it. But they got to back it up now. And it's a fun place to be in. But as Alex said, there's only one way to go, really, and if you're predicted to be the winner by every magazine, the only way to go is disappointment. We've gone from struggle bus to, you know, not making the tournament to now, oh, my gosh, if we don't win, what's going to be – you know, I think Indiana can have a successful season and finish fourth in the Big Ten, get a fourth or five seed, get to the Sweet 16, make a run for, you know, the Elite Eight. I think those things will be successful, but will it be successful in the eyes of all of us fans – in comparison to the preseason expectations? So not only does the team have to handle the hype, I think our fan base needs to appropriately handle the hype. As we saw, Michigan was the favorite last year, dropped all the way down to the eight seed in the Big Ten tournament, got beat by us and got a lower seed after they were claimed to be the favorite. So, you know, a lot of things could happen. And I still think the goals are compete for a tournament, compete in the tournament, NCAA tournament, but compete in the Big Ten title and get a good seed and get back to being regular participants in the NCAA tournament with a chance to get to a Final Four. And you only get there by starting this year with being a top, you know, three or four team in the Big Ten. That's my goal for the team. Heck yeah, I want to win it, everything, but it's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, Alex, what's your sense of how well-prepared this team is to deal with those kinds of expectations? I mean, it's a team with a lot of experience, and I think that's one of the reasons that it's it's led IU to be projected so high within the league, but it's also the experience they have isn't an experience that's won at a high level on a consistent basis so far. So how do you kind of balance those things out as you look forward to the season?
Yeah, that's why it was important for them to actually get into the tournament last year and have at least a little bit of experience there. It wasn't a great experience, obviously, with, you know, beating Wyoming was good for them, but then the way they played against St. Mary's obviously wasn't ideal. However, you feel a little bit better about, you know, how they're going to handle everything after the way they finished last season. And really they were backed into a corner. They had to get the job done in the Big Ten tournament. They did, give them credit for that. They made the tournament. I think all of us at the beginning of last season would have told you making the tournament, it was the goal. Whatever happened from that point was going to be gravy. So I think that was good. But Andy, you bring up a great point. There's a big difference between having experience and having experience with winning at a high level. And I think we're going to learn a lot about this team in the first couple weeks of the season. Well, you know, month and a half, when they play North Carolina, they play at Xavier, they play Arizona and Kansas, those two games. I mean, those are four high-level games. This team did not have those type of non-conference tests last year. I mean, they're going for their first Big Ten game is going to be on the road at Rutgers. That won't be easy. You know, if this team is going to be able to be a team that's consistently, you know, ranked in the top 25 and somebody that you're talking about, you know, when you're bracketology week in and week out, Andy, that's a top four seed, those are the kind of games where they're going to need to perform. They can't go 1-3 in those games and start out poorly in the Big Ten and really kind of live up to the preseason hype. So we're going to learn pretty quickly about how they respond to having these expectations, because there's no way to hide from the games that are early on in the schedule. It's hard for me to answer though, because, you know, these guys have played a lot of college basketball games, but they've never played a lot of college basketball games as a ranked team or a team that's expected to compete for a conference championship.
You're muted, Andy.
There we are. Thanks. You know, other couple of headlines there to touch on. I mentioned a couple of these in my opening comments that IU was picked to win the Big Ten in the Almanac, which I've only had a chance to scratch the surface of, but I'm pretty impressed with the stuff that the guys put together. I know we had Matt on a few weeks ago to talk about it, but talked about Andy Katz picking IU seventh nationally, which is a bit rich for my blood. And then Dylan Burkhart, who we'll talk about a little bit later when we get into the meat of tonight's show, has been basically tracking the preseason predictions. IU at this point has been picked first by Blue Ribbon, the Almanac, Lindy's, and Bart Torvik. So we have number one across the board, basically has, you know, an average here of where teams are ranked. And you do get into some jumbles where you've got some pretty good ranges of, you know, teams picked, you know, the same group of teams is typically toward the top, but there is some variance as you look through how different people are projected there. And then the other couple tip times announced, the IU Kansas game is going to be a noon tip there. And then IU North Carolina is going to be a whiteout. This says 9:30. I thought maybe I saw 9:15, although realistically no game starts on time, so it probably will be 9:30, even if it's not published.
It's 9:15 on the official schedule. It's listed 9:30 here, and realistically it's probably going to be, what, like 9:50?
Yeah. Tack on. I said something that nobody has more confidence in their ability to be right about something than people who schedule basketball games, soccer tournaments, in terms of like leaving time between games and stuff like that. These people have a real high opinion of how well things are going to stay on time, despite much evidence to the contrary in the past. But, you know, Coach, anything stand out to you from any of the preseason predictions that you've seen, or just, you know, the fact that IU's been a unanimous number one across those four things? Anything when you look at that chart that really sticks out at you?
Not really. There's some teams that I think are even more, have more question marks. You know, Iowa, we'll talk about in the second segment, has three players in your top 25, Alex. And then this consensus or this collection of stuff has Iowa down at number seven. Everyone knows how I feel about them not playing defense, so I think that might be appropriate. But they're surprising. Sometimes they can move up and down. What's Wisconsin, who's typically been up, even though you think every year that they're going to be on a slide there in the bottom half? So for me, it is always teams at the top predicted end up falling down because of injuries or circumstance, a three-game losing streak at the wrong time, something like that. And then there always are a couple of teams that a player or two we weren't counting on pops and has a really good season, and they move up. So you just have some clear spots for that to happen. You know, your Indiana, Michigan, Illinois, Michigan State, someone in there is probably going to fall a little bit lower, and then you have, you know, your Iowa, Rutgers, Wisconsin, Maryland, that group, is someone going to be okay and pop a little bit and move up? And then the bottom teams, is anyone going to try to break out of that with some new coaches at Penn State, Minnesota, and then typical programs? Does anyone, you know, have a good run there? So I think they're fair. I think they're extremely fair. I'm really nervous about Indiana being at the top, but I'd rather have that discussion than not from where we've been. But I think that the pecking order is fair across the board from the seven that are on this graphic. And it's just fun to see tip times for IU Kansas, IU North Carolina. I'm heading out to Vegas to see IU versus Arizona. Those are games that typically have been on the schedule in the past. It's nice to have them back, but as Alex said, you got to win a couple of them at least to have the season that you're expecting.
Yep, absolutely. All right, well, when we come back on Assembly Call Radio, we're going to discuss and debate Inside the Hall's top 25 Big Ten players, and Alex is here to defend himself, pass off blame to Dylan. I mean, the choice is really up to him, so we'll see when we come back. Stick with us.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hey guys, it's Gene Steratore, CBS officiating analyst and retired Big Ten basketball official. You know, I have never listened to the Assembly Call, and to be honest, I don't intend to. But if you listen, make sure you ignore anything Ryan says about officiating. He's really good from the seat of his pants, but I wouldn't trust him on the court with a whistle around his neck. Time has proven him wrong on virtually everything. Take care. We'll talk soon.
All right. Welcome back to the Assembly Call. I'm Andy Bottoms here with Coach Brian Tonsoni and Alex Bozich from Inside the Hall. And wanted to have Alex on to discuss the top 25 Big Ten players list that rolled out on the site that he has done the last, I'm not sure how many years is it now that you guys have done this?
I've lost count, but
you're having to think about it. So it's been plenty.
The most disappointing thing about this is Jared wants to interject his takes on some of our predictions, and he's not here to actually give them himself. So he's going to make you guys do his dirty work.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So before we get into the players, and I'm not going to read all 25 through, but I guess just talk a little bit about what the process is that you guys go through, you know, to do this each off season and how it all actually comes together.
Well, we start talking about it midway through the summer, but I'd say June, July, we start just talking about in general terms when we want to do it. I think the timing has shifted a little bit. We used to do it sometime in August, but the last couple of years, like Indiana last year had a trip to the Bahamas. And so there was going to be a lot of coverage associated with that. And we didn't want to do it that month for that reason. And then this year, Michigan had a trip to Europe that they had. So we decided to push it off a little bit into later September. But we both come up with a list of, I think, 30 to 35 separately. And then Dylan, being the being much better at Excel than I am, slams the list together. And then we kind of have a kind of a framework of kind of where we all are, where we both are together collectively on all the players. And then we just kind of talk it out from there in terms of we'll kind of go in chunks of five. And I kind of feel like every year we say it gets harder. I don't know why that is, but this year's especially was just difficult because of how much the league lost. And for me, after I got after the first five, it got pretty tough immediately. Like it took me a little, you know, a couple of days just to kind of. I went through all the rosters and I pulled all the names I thought could even be discussed. And then I kind of, after I had that list of probably 40 to 45 names, then I took like a second dive and started maybe throwing off some other ones. And then I just, you know, we both had a list, as I said, we slammed them together and then we discussed, you know, our top five were pretty clear cut in my mind. I think we agreed on the five. And then after that, that's where it got fun. So we can obviously talk about a lot of those selections. A lot of them, you know, typically we've done, I don't want to say there's no way to really do well, I feel like, on a list like this, top 25, because there's always going to be guys who underperform and there's always going to be under the radar guys. Like last year, Branham from Ohio State was a freshman we didn't have on the top 25 list. There was one year where Kata Bates Diop was coming back from an injury, I think, the previous year, didn't really do much. We didn't have him on the list. He was Big Ten Player of the Year. So that was obviously a really bad screw up on our part, somewhat explainable by the fact that he was basically a non-factor and injured the year before, and we didn't really know what to expect. But this year, it just feels like, to me, there's not a lot of difference between guys that are, you know, six all the way to 25 to 30, to be honest. It was really hard for me. One name I know that a lot of people, at least from, I was reading Dylan's board over at UM Hoops, I think one of the names that I think we were a little bit higher on and I was an advocate for was Caleb McConnell in the top 10. And I think, you know, people looked at that and said, well, how can you be so bad offensively and be a top 10 player in the Big Ten? Well, I said, well, he's arguably, to me, the best defensive player in the league, one of the better defenders in the country. Basketball is played on both ends of the court. He's an experienced guy, so he was a guy that I really advocated for. But yeah, I mean, it's, to me, you know, whatever way you want to go in the top five, I think those guys were pretty clear cut, and after that, it got interesting.
Yeah, so maybe let's start at the top five, because I do think that was probably the easy part, at least probably the top four for me, for sure. So you had Hunter Dickinson, number one, Trace Jackson Davis, number two, Zach Edey was number three, Chris Murray, number four, and then Cliff Omorui, although I think at some point they wanted to change how his last name was pronounced last year, and I feel like I've forgotten what that is, so from Rutgers. So yeah, I think to your point, you know, the top four felt pretty, pretty clear cut, because you look past some of those guys, and even Chris Murray is a bit of a projection, but he showed enough last year, I think, to feel good about that. But, you know, you look at that top five, all big guys, I think not all that different probably than what you're faced with a year ago with some of the big guys in the Big Ten. But
right.
Does this shape up to be a big man's league once again? And I guess I don't know. I think there's a lot of things when you look up and down this list that may point to some potential overall struggles for the Big Ten when it comes to NCAA tournament time, one of which is the general lack of guards toward the top of the league. But it seems like, you know, kind of shifted out a few big guys and just replaced them with a bunch of new ones.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I'm you know, Murray at four, I think the upside is there for him to be better than Zach Edey this year. You know, Edey's per 40 numbers are ridiculous, but we've never really seen him play, you know, more than 22 to 24 minutes a game. So it's hard for me to project him playing more than that. We haven't seen it before. But yeah, those names up there really kind of suggest that it's going to be the year of the big. I think that even the Almanac that came out, the Field of 68 preseason magazine, had all big guys on the cover, and it's kind of like that across college basketball. It's really the year of the big, and the Big Ten, exactly like that. Doesn't necessarily make me feel great about the Big Ten's chances of breaking the national championship drought this year when you're a league built around bigs, and we know that you got to have dynamic guard play to go win a title, but that's where the league is right now. And the other thing I'll say is, I'm sure this will be a question. We went pretty light on, we actually, I don't think we included a single freshman this year in our top 25. I think it kind of speaks to where the overall level of talent is in the Big Ten right now, the type, the recruits that they're getting. You look at the SEC, you look at the ACC, you look at the Big 12, you know, McDonald's All-Americans galore going to those conferences, not happening with the Big Ten. So are there going to be guys by this end of the season that are freshmen in the Big Ten that have played their way onto this list? Sure. But it's really hard right now to identify who that's going to be. You know, a team like Ohio State is going to play a lot of freshmen. They've got a lot of freshmen who are in that kind of ranking of 35 to 75 nationally. But how do you decipher who of those breakout guys are going to be when you've never seen these guys? Same thing with, you know, Jalen Hood-Schifino. I had him kind of on the cusp of consideration, but I also considered the fact that we have three Indiana guys in the top 25 who are all producing a ton of stats, and their roles aren't necessarily going to be diminished in any way this year. So where does another guy fit in from that perspective? So freshmen are really hard to project for lists like these. I mentioned Brandon last year with Ohio State as a perfect example. You just don't really know, unless it's a guy that's a surefire, you know, one and done player that you know is going to come in and play 25, 30 minutes a game right off the bat. It's really hard to project a guy being a top 25 player.
So you talk about guards, and I believe exactly what you said. College basketball, pro basketball, it's a guards game. You have to have wings. You have to have guards. It's nice to have a big man to go with it, but you need to have guards. So there's guards listed through 6 through 25, and they all are kind of lumped together in how you select who goes on spots 6 through 10. But if you were to look at this list and say, which guards do you think will pop and move up from their ranking, what guards do you think would move up if you did this at the end of the year?
I'll just use this chance to one of Jared's questions. So this goes into Alex, and he sent this stuff and he's not here. So he said, Terrence Shannon will be top five by season's end with Edey out. I mean,
he was
a bold presumption for a guy who was ranked sixth to start. So really, really putting it out there for that assumption. So, but I'll let you answer his question. But I figured, Alex, since you wanted to give him a little bit of a hard time about not being here, no better place than that for the bold statement that guy ranked sixth can work his way into the top five.
I mean, I think talent wise, two guys I look at that have a really good chance to play their way on and up are Jalen Hood-Schifino and Sky Clark from Illinois. I mean, I look at the guys that I have ranked right now, that we have ranked right now, AJ Hogard and Chucky Hepburn. I mean, they're good players, but that's more based on what we've seen so far and kind of, you know, the floor with those guys. We know that they're going to be solid players, so feel a little bit more comfortable. But I would just say Hood-Schifino and Clark have a definite chance in my mind to play their way up the list. One guy that we're a little bit lower on, I saw the Almanac had him preseason first team All Big Ten, which I don't necessarily agree with this, but Jalen Pickett of Penn State, put up a ton of stats last year for them, played a lot of minutes. I don't necessarily feel great about putting a guy that's probably on a top or bottom three or four team in the league, first team all league preseason, just because he put up good numbers. I think part of the equation also has to be winning games and making your team better. But, you know, looking at, you know, the list overall, I mean, Boo Booey to me is one of the more talented guards in the league, but this, he kind of gets penalized for the same reason that, that Pickett does in my mind, doesn't play on a great team. But if you're asking me which, from a talent perspective, I'm most excited to see Hood Schifino and Sky Clark of Illinois. I think they've got the talent to end up much higher. It was just hard for me to get there right now without kind of knowing exactly what their roles are going to be on their respective teams.
Yeah, one of the other big themes of this to me was a lot of transfers. And that's is what college basketball, it's a fixture in college basketball at this point. So not shocking by any stretch, but as I go down the list, you've got Terrence Shannon at six from Illinois. Matthew Meyer to Illinois was 11. Dawson Garcia was 13, transferring back home to Minnesota. You've got Jalen Llewellyn in, I think, at 22, if I'm going back and doing this correctly. Yep. So how did you guys go through and try to evaluate? You know, it's one thing to look at a Boo Booey we've seen for, you know, 6 to 7 years, it feels like at this point at Northwestern, but you know, some of the other guys coming into a new system, some of them have more experience than others. You got up transfers, which Michigan's had success with, so maybe you feel like that's a possibility there, but how did you guys go through evaluating those guys, and was that an area where you had some debate between the two of you as you tried to figure out where to slot some of them?
I mean, I think it's a combination of the talent level, kind of where you came from, what you've proven at the level that you were at, and kind of opportunity of where you're going. You know, with Terrence Shannon and Meyer, they both played at high major programs where they had pretty significant roles. I think Meyer was obviously a bit of a disappointment last year. I believe he was preseason all wooden watch list and didn't really ever hit those accolades when the season actually started. But you look at kind of the opportunity that he's going to have at Illinois. Same thing with Shannon. They're jumping into a spot where, you know, Alfonso Plummer's gone, Trent Frazier's gone, Curbelo's gone, Kofi Coburn's gone. Somebody's going to have to, you know, produce for Illinois. And I looked at those two guys, you know, they brought them in there for a reason. They're going to play a ton of minutes, and I think they're both really talented, solid players. And so I felt comfortable from that perspective. Dawson Garcia is a name that Indiana fans are familiar with. He's a former top 50 recruit. You know, he's at his third school in 3 years, but the circumstances at his, you know, previous two stops, maybe not conducive to success, maybe at all times, for just based on his personal circumstances. I know he wanted to get closer back to home, left North Carolina in the middle of the season. I think there's talent there, and I think this is the year where he finally puts that together. And Llewellyn is more of a bet on what Juwan Howard's been able to do the last couple of years with the point guards that he's brought in. He brought in Mike Smith 2 years ago, and he was, you know, really effective moving up a level. Last year, Devontae Jones maybe didn't hit the level as high as what people had hoped in the preseason, but he was a really productive, solid player. So, you know, I give Juwan Howard a little bit of credit there, just based on what he's been able to do with transfer point guards the last 2 years. So, you know, those guys, obviously Shannon Jr. to me is the highest ceiling of all of those. We have him ranked you know, kind of reflective in that. And the other guys, I'd be surprised if any of those other guys were, you know, a first team all Big Ten type of player. But as Jared mentioned, you know, Shannon definitely has a chance to play his way from six into the top five in the list. Joking here a little bit, giving Jared a hard time. But
Jared always takes risks. 6 to 5.
Well, yeah, I think he's going to be the highest usage guy on Illinois' roster this year. He's gonna, you know, have a chance to really grow his role from what it was. You know, he's been a really good player in the past at Texas Tech, but coming home to Illinois, I think he's going to be a really good player. So the transfers are hard because a lot of them now it's moving up a level. And I always get worried with guys coming into the Big Ten because it's just such a different league in terms of the physicality and the way the game is played than a lot of the leagues, especially the mid to low major leagues. You're trying to move up. It doesn't always translate. There's been some guys that it didn't work for, obviously, over the years. But, I mean, I think the three that are highest ranked, they're all coming from, you know, high major programs and situations. And then Llewellyn, like I said, giving him a little bit of a boost there, maybe just based on what Michigan's been able to do with that position the last 2 years.
So, Alex, you said that in your ranking, and I think this is good as well, that winning has to play a part in it too, not just individual stats. And you referred to Pickett of Penn State and Boo Booey, two really nice players, but their teams are in the bottom of the Big Ten. Yeah. So they're recognized on your list, but they're not. So I'm going to go to the team-by-team numbers. Do you find any correlation, as you've done this over the years, with the more players on the list, those teams tend to find ourselves at the top of the Big Ten? Obviously, there are injuries. You mentioned Justice Suing going 11th last year and he only played a couple games. So there's always some of those circumstances. But right now, teams with three players on your list, Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa, I think a lot of people could see Indiana and Illinois. Obviously, the Iowa one might be a little surprising to people, but I think the choices were well explained and well positioned. But the connection to your list, leading, kind of showing who the pecking order is of the Big Ten. Is it accurate, not accurate, or too many, you know, factors?
Yeah, that actually be a good off season project for me to go back and look. I've never done that. Just kind of go year by year, and I should pull the lists that we've done and just kind of try to look at the standings and see how it correlates. I mean, for context on this, at least with Iowa, you know, we do have Chris Murray ranked really high, but the other two guys, Patrick McCaffrey's 20 and Perkins is 23. So it's not like those guys we're projecting them to be all Big Ten first team, second, third team players. Perkins to me, he's a guy that I really liked late in the season last year. Just kind of what he was able when they put him in the starting lineup. You know, Iowa was really good that, you know, the last month of the season. I know they faltered in the actual NCAA tournament, but really good in the Big Ten tournament. I think us having Indiana and Illinois both with three players that are all pretty well represented on the list kind of speaks to, you know, where we see them as teams going into the year. Both of those, depending on who you talk to, I think most people are going to pick Indiana, Illinois 1-2, in the league. And so it should be reflective, you know, typically the teams with the most talent prevail in a given season. But coach, that's a good point. I mean, it would be a good and interesting exercise to go back and look over the years, not only at how badly we've screwed up some of these lists in previous years, but to see if there's any correlation between how many guys are on the list and where teams finish in the Big Ten play. But you know, I think Dylan liked Bowie a lot higher on the list than I did, and I can see an argument for it. It's hard. I don't want to penalize a guy from being in a situation that's really not his fault, but I also feel like if I'm going to put somebody in the top part of the list, their stats or something that they do have to be exceptional. I mean, like Jameson Battle to me had some games last year where he was, you know, his scoring average was obviously really good. And there were games last year where, you know, he looked legitimately like the best player on the court at times. I mean, they went into Michigan early in the season and really played well and beat them. And they were a competitive team in a lot of games because of him. and his shot making ability. You know, so he's maybe one guy that maybe got a little bit of a boost on the list, despite being on a team that wasn't very good. So those guys are always hard to project to, because the stats say this is a really good player, but the wins don't necessarily kind of correlate with that. So it's hard with those guys.
And so just to follow up, what I found interesting is Minnesota has two on the list. You have one in the second team, if you will, 6-10, and Dawson Garcia. So that's going to be a team that I'm going to watch based on your list, that they got a couple of nice players. Are they going to rebound? I think their coach in the second year, he did some nice things when he could last year. And then everyone listening can rejoice that Purdue just has Zach Edey, and we all think that Edey's probably going to fall a little bit lower with his play. I don't know that he can play the minutes that Purdue is expecting. And really, then there's a lot of question marks on the talent level, regardless of, I know Painter gets a lot of free passes because of the system, and he always does get high achieving, but those were the two things that stood out to me as far as the team aspect. Iowa with three on that upside, Minnesota a little upside, and Purdue a little bit watching who they decide to play on the list. But yeah, it's always interesting. And two, I don't know that you ever mess up a list, to be honest with you, because it's just like predicting the Big Ten. There are good reasons why you have teams 1, 2, 3, and 4, and then something happens in the season, they fall to 8. Predictions are extremely hard, but these are some really good lists. I'll let Andy.
Yeah, the problem with Minnesota is they have those two guys, but they
Who's gonna get those guys the ball? Is becomes
ball. I mean, they've got a Morehead State transfer maybe is gonna be their point guard. Yeah, they lost so much. You know, I'd be a lot higher on them if Peyton Willis was still on the team. They would look a lot different. Every year, like I said, I feel like it gets harder. This year was no different, just with the number of, you know, moving pieces in terms of transfers, and just the guard play is just underwhelming to me. I mean, Xavier Johnson to me was a no-brainer in the top 10. And the way some people talked about him early in the season last year at Indiana, you would have thought he shouldn't even been on the court. By the way, some Indiana fans talked about him, and he was booed early. Remember that last year? He was booed at a game. And now to me, he's a surefire top 10 player in the Big Ten going into the season. You know, he earned it with how he played down the stretch. But in most years in the Big Ten, he's not top 10 going into the season. So I think the talent level overall is just not what it was. And, you know, we know there's a ton of guys that got picked in the lottery last year in the draft, and some good players obviously moved along, graduated. So it's not a, that's another reason why I think in a normal year, an Indiana team that squeaked into the tournament, finished 48th in KenPom, is not the Big Ten favorite going into the next season, just by virtue basically of bringing back their whole team and adding a couple of good freshmen. That's typically not the team that's being picked to win the Big Ten, but I think that's the that's where we are this season in terms of the rosters in the league.
Yeah, so last thing for me on the list, and Coach brought up one of the things I did with the teams. I think if you really looked at, you know, kind of that grid that Dylan had put together of where teams averaged out in the preseason predictions, it largely followed along pretty well. You had IU and Illinois kind of the top two. Iowa was a little bit of the outlier on the one end with three players, but projected a little bit lower, and then Purdue was the outlier on the other end. But as you look at the IU guys, to kind of bring this back to them, I mean, we touched on TJD, touched on Xavier Johnson. You know, Race Thompson came in at 21 on the list, and probably a guy that is, you know, IU fans have a great appreciation for, but a little bit unique in terms of like what he brings. Not a, you know, lights out scorer, does a little bit of everything. You know, what was the general range? You landed on 21, obviously, but were there arguments that you guys had back and forth about potentially putting him even higher, or was there conversation about maybe he really belongs a little bit lower based on who else IU's got coming in and what his minutes might look like and all those kinds of things. He seems like an interesting case for this exercise.
Yeah, I think Dylan and I were both pretty similar on where we viewed him. It's hard to ignore just the production that he had last season. He's nearly a double-double guy in a lot of cases. The problem, I think, with putting him higher is I don't know how much ceiling beyond what we've already seen you can project there, because what's the opportunity, I guess, for him to have a bigger role scoring this year? I don't necessarily see one unless he starts making three-pointers more consistently. He's not all of a sudden going to start grabbing more rebounds. Trace Jackson Davis is playing in the paint too, and they've also added Malik Renew. And if anything, if I'm Mike Woodson, I'm figuring out a way. I just talked to Race Thompson at Big Ten Media Day the other day, and he talked about the fact that he was a little tired down the stretch last season. If I'm Mike Woodson, I'm hearing that, I'm thinking, how can I maybe play him 28 minutes a game and get these other guys some more minutes rather than, playing him 33 or 34 and having him, kind of lose his legs the last couple weeks of the season. So with Race, I feel pretty good about where we had him. To me, he's, by season's end, an all Big Ten honorable mention type of player, which is a really good season for anybody. I just didn't see the upside there in picking him any higher when you have two guys already on the team who are top 10 players. And I just, statistically speaking, which I hate that it's done this way, but you look at the postseason all Big Ten teams, a lot of it's just basically voted upon by stat counting and the numbers guys put up. In terms of impact, in terms of importance to his team, you can argue that Race Thompson is much higher than this, given all the intangibles that he brings and the little things he does that affect winning. But in terms of ranking him on a list of the best Big Ten players, I felt pretty good about where we had him overall.
Last thing for me,
yeah, go ahead, Coach.
Alex, is you mentioned you went through and after the top five or so, you just went through the rosters and picked out guys you thought you could discuss. From the top half or the top eight or ten teams, which team's roster struck you as, I don't know if there's a lot of talent, but they're not void of talent. That team that just you don't know a lot about. Was there a team that might be in contention at some point whose roster you really think is I guess just questionable right now, but has some potential? Would there be one team that comes to mind?
I mean, it won't be a popular answer, but Purdue to me is a team that there were some guys that I was thinking, like, do we rank this guy because he's going to get the opportunity? But it's hard with their team. It's such a, I'm confident that Purdue is going to be, a top five or six Big Ten team, possibly higher. And that's really a nod to Matt Painter and what they do on a year in, year out basis. But in terms of the players, I just don't know who's going to fill the specific roles other than Zach Edey is going to be getting the ball in the post and a lot of nights being ultra productive. Another team that I'm confident is going to be up there, but we maybe didn't have them represented all that well on the list, was Michigan State. I just like in a year like this where talent feels the parity between a lot of teams feels, there is parity, I believe, in the top five, six, seven teams. There's not going to be a huge separation. I look at the fact that they have Tom Izzo on the sidelines, and I say this is kind of a year where he can maybe work his magic and make Michigan State a Big Ten contender, even if they don't have that Jaren Jackson or, Mateen Cleaves type Big Ten player of the year talent on the roster. I think Michigan State has a chance to really be a team that, that maybe not a lot of people are talking about nationally, but by season's end, could be in that mix. The other thing I'll say was just in general, you know, in a year like this, projecting the Big Ten standings, I think the schedule that each team plays is going to have a ton of impact on the league. And unfortunately for Indiana, they've drawn kind of the short straw in terms of the double plays compared to a team like Illinois, who, you know, Illinois got a really, really favorable schedule in terms of double plays, and Indiana did not. And so we're never gonna see this happen in the Big Ten as the league continues to expand. But man, I wish the Big Ten had a true round robin schedule. I mean, how fun would that be for every team to play each other twice, and we actually have a balanced schedule? And we're just never going to get that. I mean, the Big 12, I think, is really the only league of the major conferences that still does it. And then you get like a true legitimate regular season conference champion. You're never going to get that in the Big 10. And just how much more fun would it be for us as fans to have that many more Big 10 games to talk about rather than, you know, Indiana versus Miami of Ohio or a lot of these other cupcake games. It'll never happen because all these schools have to schedule their wins in the non-conference, and the coaches would never agree to it. But man, I would love to see a true round-robin schedule. That's kind of an unscheduled rant, but that's what we're here for, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, the other team that I would kind of put a little bit, at least for me, as I'm starting to look at teams in that boat, is Ohio State. You guys had Zed Key and Suing in there. I think they're the known commodities at this point from an Ohio State perspective. They've got a good freshman class. I don't think anybody ranked enough that probably works their way in, but some transfers from, you know, a couple major conference guys, you know, you just feel like somebody's going to hit there, but you're not quite sure who it is. I think that's probably ultimately the Purdue thing. Like, somebody's going to step up and fill this void. It's just not clear who it is. So they're the other one that I'd put in there. But I know, Alex, we said we'd let you go about 10. So we're only 2 minutes late, which is probably about how late we started the show. So we appreciate you joining us, and enjoyed talking through the lists with you. And when we come back, Coach and I will answer a few questions. And that is next here on the Assembly Call. Stick with us.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, this is Deron Davis. And what's the only thing better than dominating a Duke big man in the post? It's celebrated with friends afterwards. Join Gerard, Andy, Ryan, and Coach on the Assembly Hall call after every IU basketball game. Go Hoosiers.
All right, welcome back to the Assembly Call. I'm Andy Bottoms here with Coach Brian Tonsoni, and we got a few questions that we wanted to hit. Went a little bit longer with Alex, but it was awesome to have him on and talk through some of the top 25 player stuff. So we'll hit a few of these and call it a night. This one from Walt. What's your favorite Coolio song, Coach, and why is it Gangsta's Paradise?
It has to be Gangsta's Paradise, because I recognize that song, but I know of nothing of else of Coolio. Yeah. Sorry, Walt, don't mean to disrespect, but my rap days ended in 1988, 89 when I graduated from high school, you know, with Run DMC and the Fat Boys, Houdini. I was into that, and then 1989 happened, and I went down to Bloomington, and my musical tastes have changed. So I'm not up with that, with those artists anymore.
There you go. All right, from Andrew, with the whiteout being announced for the UNC game, looking like the most anticipated game in recent memory, what were the most hyped slash anticipated games for you as IU students? Any stand out to you, Coach?
You know, again, I don't have a specific date. The Purdue games when I was on campus, Purdue basketball games, were extremely, extremely hyped, as everyone would expect. I remember doing a lot of trash talking on the side of the road as cars were leaving the assembly hall parking area as I was walking back to an apartment. Anyone who flashed any Purdue paraphernalia really got a word or two from me after IU victories. So, you know, those games were great in attendance. Obviously, that's going to be similar to the non-conference games that run the Dukes, the UNCs when they go. I mean, that's when the hall is just juiced to its max. You're gonna remember those. But for me, it was obviously the Purdue games back in the 80s.
Yeah, I would say for me, Purdue games definitely were up there. One of the more memorable ones I had was when IU beat Michigan State when they were ranked fifth. I just looked up to see what they were ranked. I did not remember this. But it was went into overtime. AJ Guyton just had a fantastic game, ended up shooting an air ball that fell right into pass that fell right into the hands of Lynn Washington to put it in at the very end of the game. That was one of the games we had floor seats for. So we had really good seats for it right behind the basket that they scored on when they won. So that's one that stands out kind of after the fact, but there was a lot of anticipation for that. Those was good Michigan State teams, top five in the country. That was definitely a big one that everybody was excited for. I don't remember a ton of non-conference games that anybody got excited for. They played Temple one year. That was a pretty good game. I think Guyton hit a three late to win that one. But in terms of, you know, that was pre Big Ten ACC challenge and Gavitt games and some of those things that would, you know, force you to have home games against some of the upper echelon teams that weren't Big Ten ones. So the Big Ten ones, it was the rivalry games, and if anybody was ranked really high coming in, at least is the ones that come to mind for me. All right, next question is lost this year. Oh, here we go. Tom, do you feel it's starting Huchefino and Scoop with Xavier Johnson, Race, and Trace now will make IU a better team in March? So basically, if you kind of start with the lineup that we think things will end with, or maybe IU's best lineup, what dividends does that pay to get that group playing together sooner?
I think it helps with continuity, but coaches always have – you play better in March with better players, 1 through 13, and then you select your starting unit. But there is something to Tom's question about you got to get guys in rotations that are used to playing with certain groups of guys. We've talked over and over about the mass substitutions. You know, I think the player it benefits the most is Tamar. I think Tamar was playing with some guys where Tamar had to be the offensive load in the second group, and he'd never played a lot with Trace Jackson Davis, where they are double teams in the post. So this lineup that Tom has presented, I think, is a good lineup. Does it need to start in order for us to be better in March? No. But playing a lot of minutes, you know, Andy used to do the lineup breakdowns of minutes, and I see that there's some other sites that kind of do that, who plays with who. I do think this lineup needs to play good amounts of minutes. I haven't studied it enough to say how many minutes in regular season games does someone have to play to have good continuity and know each other's moves and where they need the ball and all that kind of stuff. But I think this is, Tom, the best lineup. Whether it starts or not is, I think, irrelevant. But I am with you. This would be a lineup that I would like to see start. I think it also gives some experience off the bench with Miller Kopp, not to diminish his role, but he can come in and be a sharpshooter, instant offense, three-point shooter against the reserves of another team. I think that and then we've talked about the post strength, the depth of the post strength. So there's all kinds of things that will go into lineups, but I do, Tom, think that the more this team plays together earlier, whether it's starting or off the bench minutes, then you want this team to be at its peak, these five guys, and then sprinkle in some subs for an 8-9 man rotation in March.
Yeah, I mean, we've got only a 1-year sample size of looking at things with Woodson, but it seems pretty unlikely this would be a group that would start together at the beginning of the season. But I think to your point, they have to do a better job of using some of these early games to experiment a little bit with different combinations of guys, and whether that's this one because you think that eventually this is going to be the best one or whatever else, but getting those opportunities. What you said about Tamar was spot on in terms of the lineups that he played with last year. In a lot of cases, didn't maximize his chances to be successful. And so you've got to put not just Hood Schifino and Tamar, but all the guys in some cases that are going to give them those kinds of opportunities for success, so you can figure out how to mix and match, and different guys may complement each other better. So I don't think I think starting them could pay some dividends. I just don't know that that's a situation that's going to play itself out in the way that the question's asked. So Phil had this one, and would have been a good question for Alex if we could have kept him a little bit longer, but have all heard positive news about Jalen Hood Schifino. Logan had a nice write-up this week. Alex mentioned just some of the comments that he got earlier. Just kind of asked what's up with, you know, Jordan Geronimo, Tamar, Caleb Banks, CJ Gunn. Coach, you hearing anything in particular about those guys as practice gets underway?
No, we saw Tamar hit a lot of shots in the event called where they had a scrimmage and Hysterics put it together. A really nice thing for the fans and stuff.
Yeah.
I forget the official name, but yeah, you saw him hitting some shots about that. We're going to hear Phil, whoever says something in a media situation, and that's going to be the person who's talked about, and then the media is going to go track down that person and talk to them a little bit more about what their teammates said. I imagine all of these guys are making progress with practice starting today. The thing I would say, without hearing a whole lot about those guys, is they're going to have to compete for minutes. That's this roster has talent. This roster has depth. You have people who are surprising us, like Logan in the comments last week. So the practices, I expect the practices to be high-level, intense competitions for playing time. And I would imagine all of these guys are getting better. Of those four, I would assume that Geronimo and Tamar are in positions to play early, and Banks and Gunn are a little bit lower and have to really fight and impress to break in into the rotation would be my guess, but that's not from anything I've heard officially.
Yep, I would agree. I think Banks and CJ Gunn, though, are guys that fit very well into what we just talked about in the other how can you put those guys in complementary roles with some other players who are going to attract defensive attention to give them a chance to, you know, get their feet under them a little bit to start the season. From Craig, how would you spend the additional TV money coming in? Your options are build a new basketball arena, so we know which one Ryan would pick without even reading the rest of the question. 2, make a top-notch football facility. Or 3, bring in a proven winning football coach. Or 4, other. You can only pick one. What direction do you go?
Well, I usually agree with my friend Ryan, my fellow Italian Ryan, but I disagree with him on the new basketball arena. So I would not pick that one, and you, I can go into a long thing, which I won't, about why we just renovated Simon Scott Assembly Hall. I don't think that's going to be with this new money. I think Tom Allen's going to be here, whether you think he's doing well or not. I think he's been a decent fit for Indiana. Needs to fix some things to stay at Indiana. So my choice would be, put some money into a football facility. It's so hard to keep up with the Joneses with facilities in college athletics, especially when our stadium at maximum seats 52 and Michigan's bringing in 110 or 108 for their games. But in order to win in football and to make more money and get more fans in the seats, you're going to need to try to keep up football-wise, even though this is a basketball show. So I think a top-notch football facility that can continue to improve the recruiting will lead to winning faster than the basketball arena. I think we're going to win no matter what because of the arena. And I think Coach Allen can win. He's shown that. And I'm not the hugest fan of what's going on right now in the football program when I say that, but I don't think changing coaches necessarily changes the football program more than getting a facility. So I'm going to choose facility.
Yeah, the football – I don't know your reasoning for not picking the basketball one, but I wouldn't pick that either. I mean, given the proportion of the money that really comes in from a revenue standpoint that comes from football, that's really where you have to compete. I know a lot of that came up in terms of – a number of the comments around conference expansion and things like that. So the other two kind of become a chicken and egg thing, right? Like it's really which of those two things do you think improves your program the most overall? You could take the approach that if you went and got a proven coach, that then that elevates your program to a point where you're making enough revenue to reinvest that into the facilities. Can make the other argument that you need to do the facilities so that you really can maximize what this staff can give you. For the sake of being different, I'd lean a little bit more toward getting a proven coach, but I also am not sure that you can get a proven coach by just, I mean, you're just and throwing tons of money at somebody when a guy who's really won at a high, high level and then steps in and looks at the facility and says, well, I don't know that I can do what I did at, you know, insert prior school here, you know, given these constraints. So maybe I just talked myself into agreeing with you. I don't know
but there's a compromise out there, and we can go to Craig's other situation is put that money into coordinators. When Tom Allen's had great coordinators, we win. Now the difficulty is if you have great coordinators, they move on to head coaching jobs. With both of those guys did, and Womack and DeBoer moved on to head coaches, it's hard to maintain them. But maybe the answer is with Allen is what Indiana football has been, the LEO. A lot of people like that, and it's been drawing some recruits. Keep that. He's a good manager of the football program, but he really needs great assistance in order to win at a high level in a non-COVID year, in my opinion. So pay the offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator. Maybe you get those years where those guys stay for a year, two, 3 years before they pop, and then – that becomes a place where people want to go to become a head coach, and we can win a little more consistently and get to the 6 or 8 win level every year and not go, you know, top of the, you know, 2 really good years and then back to 2 and hopefully more than 3 or 4 this year. So maybe it's a combination of really good coordinator coaches. Maybe keep the head coach.
Yep. All right. Last one, Kevin, if one of the players on this year's roster follows in Mike Woodson's footsteps and eventually becomes the IU head coach decades from now, which player would you bet on doing so?
Oh, my goodness. This is a great question. Anthony Leal.
This is a really good one.
I'm going to go Anthony Leal. From an energy standpoint, there's also – and usually your better coaches aren't your top players. You know, so I wasn't good at playing. That's why I became a head coach. I don't know if I was a good coach even at that. But because you got to fight and claw to get on the court. So you know the little angles and nuances, and you study more film. The good guys just show up and jump and dunk the ball and then go home with 3 cheerleaders on their arms, you know. us uglies had to set screens and know how to block out and take a charge and get bruises, and we never went to dances. You end up being coaches. So – sorry, Anthony, I think you're probably a little better looking than Coach Tonsoni. But Anthony Leal would be one off the start that I think because of his energy and his devotion to Indiana, you could see him maybe if he chooses coaching to come back.
Yeah, he was one that came to mind immediately because of just his, you know, IU basketball is kind of in his blood, so if you look at it through that lens, I think you could see that. I think you even see it through some of the things he does on the court from a, you know, defensive perspective, just kind of being in the right help position. And some of the things that he does there probably suggest that he's pretty into that part of it. Now, Trey Galloway, dad was a coach, so maybe there's some
that was the other one for me.
Some possibility there. But I have no idea whether he would be interested in it, but I think Race Thompson would be an interesting one as well. I think a guy who does a little bit of everything, plays at a high level, but you know, guy that certainly has been around the program for as long as anybody at this point. So he might be another one that's, you know, more on the, you know, potential, you know, key player as opposed to, you know, a bench guy. But that was a good question. So
that's it.
Ryan would have said Race Thompson for sure. So
that's it. We're done. No more questions.
He keeps interrupting you.
That's it.
I know.
We're done.
It's
no more
like
questions.
All right. Well, that will do it for us on this week's episode of the Assembly Call. If you want to see us do the show live, join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for the live broadcast of our Assembly Call radio recording. Thanks to Bob Thompson for producing our music, and thanks to John Ringer of rigdesign.com for designing our logos. Thanks to Coach for being a great producer, and thank you for listening. We'll talk to you on next Thursday. Until then, keep your elbows in, your eyes on the rim, and go Hoosiers.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out.
Hey, we pulled it off.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Cool. Well, I appreciate you doing that. I'll have to figure out
that actually, going on with. You know, that's actually
it does
something.
It kind of ease the burden a little bit. Maybe
it is something that we might want to consider, too. Like, if we put graphics in, like I tried to type in the names that we were talking about, and you can put graphics in. I've watched enough podcasts on golf and betting and everything else that maybe that's something that, you know, if you put someone in charge of popping that stuff up or whatever. I kind of enjoyed that, to be honest with you.
So some of the best ideas just
because you know from hosting you're thinking ahead to what you're doing. Am I closing the segment? Is on what? Do you push the right button? Is the timing right? You know. And some nights it works, and other nights you're just like fumble city with technology and everything. So.
Yep. 100%. So
something to think
about. All right. Well, appreciate it.
All righty, man.
Thanks everybody for joining us.